Good afternoon, and thanks to Jim and to the conference organizing committee for this wonderful opportunity here to talk about my work on dogwoods. The Cornus genus has about 55 species that are all trees or shrubs, except three species that are herbaceous perennials with woody rhizomes that include Cornus canadensis. And I don't have the pointer. Okay, so my talk today will be divided into two parts. I'll begin with the first part. And among all the dogwood species, that the Cornus florida are probably the economically most important. And the species is also actually ecologically important to the eastern North American forest as a critical calcium pump to various invertebrates and birds and mammals. And however, the function of the species in the forest is diminishing due to largely the dogwood anthracnose disease. And other diseases like powdery mildew add further component the threat of the species survival. And on a diseased area, tree mortality has been reported to as high as 94%. However, in this other gray area of the species range, and the trees seem to have maintained pretty healthy during the past 40 years since the introduction of the pathogen. So we ask these questions, you know, has the species evolved local adaptation as the consequence of pressures from environmental and ecological heterogeneities? Or if yes, what environmental factors might be the driving forces? And what loci are under selection for local adaptation? And are there any of them associated with plant health? So to gain insight into these questions, before I get to that, so local adaptation often occurs through natural selection, acting on a number of loci, like many loci, each having a very small effect. So one way to detect this loci is to identify genetic polymorphism that showing close relationship with the environmental variables. And so one can scan the genome for signature of local adaptation using computer algorithms that build on ecological modeling and population genetics. And such as these algorithms implemented in Arlequin and Basescan and this latent factor mixed modeling, and that are efficient and effective method to identify loci under selection and correlation between environmental variables and genetic variation. And so my student, Andrew Pace, used genotyping by sequencing method to generate genome-wide markers and invest the pattern of genetic variation of these many, many loci in several populations occurring in distinct ecological habitat, representing the mountains, the peat mount, and the coast area. So these areas differ in rainfall, in temperature, and growth period, and in soil type, and disease occurrence. So with the mountain area, it's wetter, colder, and different in soil composition, and more apparent in disease occurrence comparing to the coastal region. And these are some of the environmental variables that we collected data for the analysis to identify factors that may be important contributors in driving local adaptation or genetic differentiation. And so taking a method used by forest specialists, we measured the disease severity by visual estimation of percent of leaf blotting and branch dieback. And so with trees, heavy disease ranked as 1, and trees has no signs of disease ranked as 5. And so the genome marker was generated by cutting the genome using two restriction site enzymes and sequence those small fragments, as indicated in red, of about 350 base pairs in size. And we generate these markers for two libraries, each containing a pool of DNA samples from the different populations occurring in the three environments. And so we did detect a large number of loci that were sequenced in both libraries. And so the analysis of this data found two weakly differentiated genetic groups, and mainly with plants from the Piedmont and mountains grouped together, and then the plants from the coast group in another cluster. And scanning the genome using these markers with the algorithm I mentioned before, identify a small proportion of single nucleotide polymorphism representing 54 loci to be under selection. And among these loci, 45 were found to be associated with climate, and 30 with the soil properties, and 4 with plant health. And so our results suggest environmental-driven selection on specific loci has resulted in local adaptation in response to, for example, calcium deficiency, temperature, precipitation, and disease. And this conclusion is further supported by a high amount of allele frequency turnover of the candidate loci along ecological gradients. As shown here on this slide, a few examples of the candidate loci under selection for their allele frequency turnover along ecological gradients. And so for the loci under selection driven by a particular environmental factor, the allele frequency changed abruptly along the gradient of the environmental factor, as indicated by the yellow or orange lines. And we also found that a large number of SNPs are associated with temperature, suggesting the importance of temperature in driving local adaptation. And so one of these candidate loci is interesting, which is predicted to be a part of a locus encoding for L-type lectin receptor kinase, which was reported to be an important protein for plant immunity to disease. And the signal it was presumably received by the lectin domain and triggered signal cascade and modulate plant secondary metabolism to directly respond to plant disease effector. And so using the dog's draft genome, we map the locus of the sequence of this locus to the genome and identify the genomic position of this candidate SNP in here. And interestingly, another SNP was found to be associated with a disease gradient when the disease was measured by the abundance of the dogwood anthracnose sequences in the plant. In a later range-wide study, is mapped to this position in the genome, 91 base pair down the stream of the same gene. And this later found a SNP allele frequency turnover occurred at a longitude of the hot continental ecological range region that has high disease incidence. And so by mapping the sequences to the dogwoods and dogwoods anthracnose genomes, we identify the sequences belonging to dogwoods anthracnose. And we found the abundance of the dogwoods anthracnose sequences in the plant is much higher in the diseased site comparing to a healthy site. So using 1,000 sequences per million reads in the plants that uniquely mapped to dogwoods anthracnose genome as positive evidence of disease occurrence, and we visualize the disease occurrence using a heat map on the ArcGIS. And so the red dots and the red circle represent those sites has verified report of dogwood anthracnose disease, and the bubbles represent the sites that pass in this threshold of fungal sequence, and the two overlap nicely. And we also found the prevalence of the dogwood anthracnose sequences in the plant negatively correlated with the temperature. And this is consistent to the previous ecological literature suggesting that colder temperature in mountains and northern regions are more conducive to for dogwood anthracnose proliferation. And so we also examined the metabolite diversity in the plants to see if any of them associated with local adaptation or with plant health. And so we found that the health score of the plant rose with the indices of leaf chemical diversity, as shown here. And we used Gaussian graphical modeling to identify metabolite association and reconstruct a putative chemical network. And this shows a reconstructed network for a putative iridoid glucoside and derivatives. And what is interesting is that this particular metabolite or feature in the network is correlated with plant health. And so the abundance or increased accumulation of the metabolites in healthy plants. And so this random forest biomarker test indicating that this metabolite is highly predictive in classifying a tree to be healthy or diseased. This slide shows the SNPs under selection with predictive functions and their association with the features or metabolites or their derivative or adducts or fragments in this network. As indicated here, highlight the SNPs. And I want to just pull your attention to this particular locus that encodes for the L-type lectin receptor kinase. And it was found to be associated with this downstream metabolite pathways that differentially produced putative iridoid glucoside biomarkers in diseased and healthy plants. And importantly, the predictive structure of these metabolites are previously determined in Cornish Florida in an earlier study. So the structure provided a standard for future study of this compound in the species. So we found evidence from independent studies suggesting this locus to be a strong candidate under selection for biomarkers that could be predictive of plant health and diseases. So what all this means to horticulture? And I think our findings provide some useful information, perhaps guiding selection of suitable trees with proper genotypes for breeding, for example, for cultivars with desired traits that may be adaptive to different environmental conditions or disease stress. And so we found a signature of local adaptation in the genome, and then these temperature, precipitation, soil, and diseases are important factors. And among the loci that we found to be important for local adaptation and might be associated with plant health, and this loci coding for the L-type lectin receptor kinase stands out as an excellent candidate for future studies. Okay, so I have a switch to gear to talk about this molecular studies or inflorescence evolution. It's going to be minutes. And so the genus is an excellent system for study the molecular basis of inflorescence evolution in corners in angiosperms. And so you can see the one major lineage is showing the large elongated inflorescences, and another produces the umbels, and another has this mini dicacia, another has heads. And they are all close determinate inflorescences. And so we ask, so during the divergence of evolution of corners, and what might have happened in the gene or in the molecular or genetic regulation that responsible for the difference in morphology. And so we took this candidate gene approach, and I only have maybe time to talk briefly on this part. And it is known that these three genes in the modern plants Arabidopsis are key regulators in inflorescence development. And so we ask, the leafy and AP1 are determining the flower, meristem, and TFR1 determine shoot identity. And so we ask if variation of gene expression of these three genes in corners may be essential for the modification in corners. And so we examined the expression, spatial temporal expression pattern of these genes, three genes in corners, and found variation in gene expression of AP1 and TFR1 among inflorescence types, but not in leafy. And so this is showing the expression of TFR1 homologs in corners early inflorescence development, which is showing little signals in the condensed inflorescences, but strong signals in the umbels and strong signals in the elongated type of inflorescences. And so the QT-RT-PCR results clearly indicate the differences in expression pattern and level of AP1 and TFR1 among inflorescence types, as indicated by the different heights and positions of the green bar and red bar, representing the two genes here, and indicating of the difference in level of gene expression expression among the species and at different stages. But this is not apparent in the leaf expression among the species, although differences observed among stages within the inflorescence type. And so this slide shows that the expression of TFR1 and AP1 actually complementary within a species. When TFR1 is high and AP1 is low, and vice versa, and this is consistent among the inflorescence type. So in suggesting that alteration of suggesting that these two genes change may be important to the modification of inflorescences in corners. And so using the phylogeny, we map the changes in gene expression onto the branch and identify association of these changes with the morphological change in development. And so we found the suppression of upregulation of TFR1 as indicated by the lighter color of the blue are correlated with the morphological changes leading to condensation of inflorescence architecture, as indicated here. And then the upregulation of AP1, as indicated in the red color, associated with the loss of pedicel elongation, suggesting that alteration of gene expression of these two genes may be important in the modification of inflorescence in corners evolution. And so as the differences of inflorescences in corners are mainly differ, lying in the number of branch meristems and their elongation. And so a linear relationship analysis found a positive relationship between TFR1 and branch index. So suggesting TFR1 may be even more important, most important in the evolution of inflorescence in corners. And this hypothesis is supported by functional analysis of TFR1 in Arabidopsis. So by introducing constitutive expression of TFR1 from Cornus canadensis and Cornus florida into the mutant of TFR1 in Arabidopsis, we rescue the phenotypes into wild type, and it promotes vegetative growth and delay the flowering. And so by downregulating TFR1 in Cornus canadensis, we found some transgenic plants that early flower and some changes in the inflorescences, like smaller inflorescences and change of the first node leaf to bracts, and then the leaf bud to small inflorescences. And so synthesizing the data, we come up with a model of TFR1 AP1 based model to explain the variation of the closed inflorescences of, in corners, which may be also applicable to other angiosperm lineages with variation of closed inflorescences. That can be tested in the future. And no time to talk about this. And so I do want to mention that using the genetic transformation we established with Cornus canadensis using agrobacteria, we generate a variety of Cornus canadensis with the SOR genes from a hot spring archaea. So the plants, transgenic plants, is heat tolerant, which may provide a good ground cover plants in the south for the gardening. As the transgenic plant do not make fruits or pollens, and the native range of this species occurring in the northern region, circumboreal region. The plants are beautiful. So if anyone knows, anyone interested in about the transgenic plants, we can talk. And so these are the work we are going to do in the future and ongoing, and we are seeking funding to support the study, so wish me good luck. And so a lot of people to thank, and collaborators and helpers, and thanks to Jim and the NSF support, and other people in Dogs Genome Project. And the other part, you know, lots of collaborators and students, and undergrad students help, very important. And thanks to Ken Shear, she's here, for help with the transformation. Okay, thank you. Welcome to visit my website. Thank you.